Yeah, we design, manufacture, and supply what I would refer to as strength conditioning equipment or gym equipment in layman's terms. In our DNA, we're a B2B, if you like, fit out business that we'll go into a gym and take care of everything from flooring, and then we'll make racks predominantly in our factory in Belfast, and then we supply all the accessories, your kettlebells, weight plates, barbells, everything else you need. So yeah, I've been going since 2012, and we have been lucky, I guess, to punch above our weight in terms of some of the clients we have. Irish rugby, probably 75% of the Premier League teams, lots of cool gyms, Marchand's gym. Then we have our key accounts, which is predominantly Pure Gym, who are the second biggest gym chain in Europe. They've got 600 gyms, and we're their sole supplier globally.
Welcome to the pod. Today, my guest is Greg Bradley, the founder of Blackbox. It takes courage and belief in yourself and your business idea to take the step to set up your own business. In the early stages, entrepreneurship can be a lonely road, even through those milestone moments. Deciding to commit to the idea you've been mulling over, learning, growing, and developing your skills, building a team to help you along the way, preparing to launch into new markets. Enterprise Ireland is there for all of those startup moments. From providing advice and guidance to new founders through our startup network, to pre-seed funding and early investment, we're here to help bring your ambition to fruition. To find out how Enterprise Ireland can help you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Nostra, an Irish IT company, offers world-class managed IT services, cloud solutions, IT support, and more, all tailored to meet your business needs. Whether you're streamlining operations or boosting productivity, their expert team is ready to help. Visit nostra.ie or email info@nostra.ie to see how they can solve your IT challenges today. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns, they're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of The Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code VOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me, when it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie. Use code VOX20 and elevate your marketing game today. Greg, welcome to the pod.
Thanks, Gary. Glad to be here.
It's a true pleasure to have you here because you helped me survive COVID.
I'm glad. How did that tell us more?
Directly and indirectly. So, start of COVID, we just moved into a new house. I had nothing. I had literally no fitness equipment because I'd gone to a gym all my life. I was like, total lockdown. No gyms, no nothing. So I managed to get some of your rare equipment into my house at the start of COVID. And honest to God, it was a lifesaver.
Yeah, no, well, glad we could help. It's COVID was a crazy time. Equipment, they say, was the new dumbbells were the new toilet roll. You know, the Google searches were crazy, and as a business, we stayed open throughout the whole time. It was a turbulent time, but yeah, look, if we could have prepared for COVID, we could have sold 100 times more than we actually did. But we did a huge stock and supply chain challenges and even scaling up the manufacturing. But I think people think, oh yeah, Blackbox, you must have made so much money during COVID. Like, we did have a busy time, but now I think if we step back, we're probably, 4 years after it started, I actually think COVID was probably a net negative for us as a business. You know, yes, you had that initial demand, but we only had so much stock. And then post-COVID, like, we can touch on it in a bit more detail at a later stage, it was a massively challenging period for the business, because you imagine you had e-commerce going crazy and then it just stopped. like that.
Yeah.
And then gyms had been closed and continued to close. And so you kind of basically had no real business. Well, when I say no business, it was just like, yeah, fell off a cliff. So it was a challenging period, and we had obviously scaled up the business. So it was a stressful period, but now we're back to kind of normal and grew roughly 60% last year, wow, which is good, and hopefully go for another 20-25% this year. So yeah, look, COVID, I would say there was other industries that were hit much tougher and had to, many businesses went out of business. We were able to continue to trade, but all in all, I would say it was, yeah, maybe a net negative, but we got through it.
Anyone not in the sports world that doesn't know what you do, what does Black Box do?
Yeah, we design, manufacture and supply what I would refer to as strength conditioning equipment, or gym equipment in layman's terms. We don't do lots of cardio or, you know, treadmills or elliptical. We're more of a strength brand, and we specialize in end-to-end gym design. So that's kind of in our DNA. We're a B2B, if you like, fit out business that we'll go into a gym and take care of everything from flooring, and then we'll make racks predominantly in our factory in Belfast, and then we supply all the accessories, your kettlebells, weight plates, barbells, everything else you need. So yeah, I've been going since 2012, and we have been lucky, I guess, to punch above our weight in terms of some of the clients we have. Irish Rugby, probably 75% of the Premier League teams, lots of cool gyms, Marchand's gym.
Huge fan of him.
Yeah.
Big fan, Ollie.
Yeah, Ollie's got a huge loyal following. And yeah, we're doing two gyms for them in the next couple of months, and we've done two for them before. So look, it's a really cool industry to be in. And that is the icing on the cake. The business has been built on looking after, you know, small business owners, a lot of GAA clubs, even home gyms as well. But yeah, we have been lucky to work with some really cool clients as well.
I'm so excited to talk to you because, like, it's such a cool product. Like, I'm massively into it anyway, so kind of I'm your target audience. But like, when you see you're working with like these major brands, like to see a company based out of Belfast fitting out some of the world's best teams, like that's phenomenal.
Yeah, it is cool. And look, there's been a huge amount of hard work that's went into it. And look, we talk about an internal mantra being like, the most important client you have is the one that you already have. And we generally will use the word client as opposed to the word customer, because like customer, sometimes it's a bit more of a one-off transaction, whereas a client, we like to have long-term relationships. And I try to, you know, teach our team that you need to almost act as a fiduciary to your client and give them proper advice. And sometimes that might be, look, we're maybe not the best company to work with you. That's not the normal stance. But there is, you know, if someone's looking maybe some really cheap equipment or loads of cardio, that's not what we specialize in. But a lot of the business has just came through repeat business, referrals. We did get to do Barcelona last summer. We haven't really got to promote it too much. Sometimes some of the big organizations can be a bit more challenging, but that was a pretty cool pinch me moment. And I said to the guys, I was like, how did you know about Black Box? And they just seen, they were in the gym and seen our equipment. Likewise, one of the German football teams, Borussia Dortmund, they were over staying in a Corinthia hotel and seen our equipment, and they just really liked it, and their coaches wanted it, and they got in touch. So yeah, so much of the business does come through that if you've got a good quality product.
Like, it looks great. Like, it looks slick. Like, your whole branding, your approach. I don't even know how I came across you guys first, but I remember looking and going, that's just different. It's got a feel. It's got a premium feel. Like, how have you built that?
Yeah, look, I wouldn't say it's just me. And personally, I feel we've so much work to do in terms of, like, I feel we're a good company and we do have good products, but I'm also just like, how do we improve, you know, just this constant obsession of, you know, how do we do 1% better? It's not like a, we want to change things massively. But like, I kind of played sport and I wanted the equipment for myself. That was how I started the business. And I studied communication, advertising, marketing. And when I say studied, I basically drank 4 days a week at uni and got through it. But I'm not an engineer and I don't know a huge amount about manufacturing, but have been able to set up a sizable manufacturing business. And I think the take-home point probably would be it's being aware where you're good at and what you're strong at, and then just getting other really good people around you to support you. Miles, he's our commercial director, been with us for 10 years, and he actually, we didn't start out as Black Box. It was a much worse name, which I don't want to mention because it's the worst name ever, but we've actually rebranded twice. And then I came out of a coffee shop in Belfast and I seen this music venue, Black Box, and I texted to Miles, and he always likes to be a little bit contrarian to maybe challenge my ideas, which again is hugely important in business. You want people that are just not yes people, they're willing to challenge you. And he came up with the logo and came up with the initial brand. And then we did that logo and we announced it and it went down. I was so nervous, but it went down really well in 2014. And then, but we didn't really invest in the brand, but we invested so much in the back end of the business, you know, spent millions of pounds on machinery, laser cutters, welding machines, powder coating, the best you can buy. But probably 2 years ago, we realized we really need to invest in the brand because it needs attention. And we spent a lot of money trying to work with external agencies and stuff. And I was thinking, what is wrong with us? We cannot get the result we want here. And then we just said to Miles, it was like, look, you created this original logo. Can you just do this? And we brought a little bit of external support in, but most of it has to come from within. And I think that was one of the many mistakes we made, was thinking hiring the best agencies. Some won't always give you the result, you know. I'm sure there is loads of good agencies. I don't want to kind of put everyone in the tar everyone with the same brush, but I think if you are trying to create a world-class brand, you need to do it from within your company.
It's such a familiar tale. That's why I was kind of smiling as you were saying it, because I people have said that to me so often, is that standard thing of like, we started to go really well. And then we're like, oh, better get professional. We'll bring in the experts. And then the experts come in and they're experts at what they do, but they're not experts in your business.
Yeah.
And then you realize this is just in our DNA. Like, we know this, we live this, we breathe this, we got this. And then you go back and you're like, yeah, we've nailed it.
Yeah.
Like it's so common. How do you even think to set up a manufacturing business though? Because especially as an early stage entrepreneur, it's so bloody expensive. It's kind of like the last thing people think of to go into services or, you know, reselling. Like, how did you think, okay, I'm going to set this up, but I'm going to start making it?
Yeah. So at the start, basically, I finished university and I was literally just sitting in my parents' house. I downloaded pictures of like sleds and prowlers, which are pretty popular these days. And I didn't have them at this point, but put it onto adverts.ie and marketplace. One of the guys that rang me was Conor McGregor, strength conditioning coach, a guy Owen Lacey, who owns the Irish Strength Institute. And he was like, I need this equipment for next Sunday. And I was like, oh, we've loads of orders and our order book's really busy, but I'll do my best. And I didn't have anything. I was just sitting in my boxers, basically. But then I went to a fabricator in Coleraine, where I'm from, in sort of North Coast, and said, can you make this equipment? And he was like, have you got engineering drawings? And I was like, what is this, an engineering drawing? Here's a photo, just make it. And he did, and we delivered the product. And like the first probably 2 years of the business, there was lots of pivoting, if you like, reselling other brands, selling protein. I met a consultant, a guy Fergus, who worked with Liverpool, and he is kind of like challenged me, you know, how much equipment would you sell? You should get into supplements because it's a lot more replenishable. And the theory was correct.
Yeah.
But my gut feeling was like, I don't want to be in that industry. I want to do this equipment. But at that stage, I wasn't confident in my own knowledge. So we did it. But then I was like, no, the manufacturing needs to happen. And at that stage, there wasn't anyone doing it in the UK and probably Europe. You know, there was Rogue and other companies in America doing it. So I could see this trend of CrossFit, strength conditioning. Joe DeFranco used to watch all these videos. And I was like, I want to create this in the UK. So I went to a local college and paid the welding lecturer £400 for a welding machine. And I was like, can you give me your best graduate to weld for us? He gave us a guy, and he was from Eastern Europe, and he lasted about a week because he got an offer to go work in the oil rigs. But then the guy that replaced him is our longest serving team member, a guy, Michael Murta. He was our first welder, and he started to make the equipment. And what I did was, my friend was a technology teacher, and I just sent him, I still have the emails, and I laugh, I sent him a sketch of the kind of first upright for the rigs and racks, and he created it, and then we subcontracted the work out and started bringing it in-house. And I paid him with the out-of-date protein that we used to, we struggled to sell. So
I love this, though, because I think these are the magic moments in this podcast when you kind of look at a massive brand. We work at Barcelona, we work at all these players, and you trace it back to the start, because that's the bit most people don't get to see, is like, how did Greg do this day one? Because it's, when you look at it now, you're like, it's such a big organization and they make unbelievable things. It's so hard to imagine how you even got started. Yeah. That's a cracking story.
Yeah, look, I was in student debt, and I think that's probably a good thing, because when you're getting charged for being in an overdraft, that pressure, it makes you figure out how you're going to do things. And look, I didn't bring investment in at the start because I feel sometimes money could suffocate creativity. One thing I think I am good at is I am resourceful and could turn lemons into lemonade. That's probably been my strength in terms of just maximizing very limited resources, and that's helped us to get to where we are. Look, there's other examples of that, but I think it's a hugely important trait as a business to be able to do that. And we want to keep that sort of culture within the business, because as you grow, if you lose that, you know, I think it will sort of be a negative for us. So
how do you keep that culture, though? Because that's one of those interesting things. As companies grow, obviously the founder is like, you know, everyone knows the story of Amazon used to use doors for desks and all that crack.
Yeah.
But how do you actually keep that? Because obviously it's ingrained deeply in you, and it's probably ingrained in the first 10, maybe the first 20. As you grow beyond that, how do you keep that resourcefulness?
Yeah, it's a great question. Look, I'll be honest, I think there was a stage when you're growing fast, literally, I remember it was just like, get us anyone in this business, you know, like, yeah. And you know, you hear about the theory, you know, hire slow, fire fast and stuff, but that goes out the window when you're under pressure, you're trying to grow quick. And we did hire too many people too quickly, probably during COVID. And some of the people did not fit our culture. And there was like some people joining us, and we make, again, you know that you shouldn't do it, but you do it. Like, we hired some people from big companies, and then they come to work in a small business, and you ask them to set up their own laptop when they start, and they look at you like you've got two heads, you know. So we have made the mistakes. We've hired people that weren't right culturally. So now what we do is, in our recruitment process, we try to almost put people off coming to work to Black Box. You know, we've stole the "we're a team, not a family" from Netflix, and we try to make that clear, that, like, I do feel we've a really good culture within the business, but it is a performance culture in terms of, we're a relatively small business, you're expected to perform here. But I also think I need to, and I have had to be a bit more maybe calm or accept, you know, I used to just hire young people into the business that were into training and stuff, but I think you do need to get a blend of, you're going to have maybe 20% of your people will just die for this business. You've probably got maybe 30-40% that, you know, they'll do the 9 to 5, and that's fine, you know, you have to accept that. And then you've probably got some people that probably don't even want to do that much. So I think it's just accepting that. But I think it's, I heard a quote or a saying, you know, the shadow of the leader kind of goes the further. You know, you need to be congruent with what you're saying. So I will never ask someone to do something that I haven't done. Like, I've done every job in the business. I don't do that anymore, but occasionally I will help out in any area. And we talk about your job versus your role within Black Box, and everyone's job is to make the company better. Your role might be finance, marketing, sales, whatever. And the two things occasionally can conflict, but we kind of have that little sort of internal mantra, because we don't want this culture of people saying to us, that's not my job description, because that drives me mad.
I can see it in your eyes, the flick of rage.
Yeah.
I love that phrase. I literally wrote it down, your job versus your role. It's a great way of thinking about it.
Yeah, I can't remember where I heard it. And look, I have very few original ideas myself.
We'll credit it to you.
But I do read a lot of books and listen to lots of podcasts. And someone said, you know, like, it's like a left back for a football team. You know, their role is defend, but their job is to help the team win, you know. Mm. And I really struck home for me. So
have you taken a lot of this kind of mindset from sport?
Oh yeah, we, you know, one of our core values, I know Gymshark and other companies have it, don't be a dickhead, from the All Blacks. We take a lot from sport, because quite a lot of our team are from a sporting background, and there's so much take home and carry over from sport. And, you know, that's what we talk about, being a team, because ultimately, if you're not performing, we will try and support you and sort that out and understand that there's stuff can happen outside of work. But ultimately, if you're not performing over a long period of time, Black Box isn't a place for you. You know, there is other places that, you know, that you're a family, or, you know, maybe public sector, a job for life. Unfortunately, that's not what Black Box is. And it's important that we make that clear, because we have had some people that it looks like a really fun place to work, and people maybe think all we do is
work out.
Yeah. And look, it's a very important part of it, yeah. But there's also the part of working very hard. And if I think why Black Box has been successful is we are obsessed about this. Like, you know, there's a huge amount of personal responsibility and accountability. If we say we're going to deliver a job to someone at a certain time or at a certain date or at a certain budget, we will deliver it. Look, behind the scenes, things might be absolute mayhem to deliver it, but that's the most important thing. And that's part of the reason we have the manufacturing, because, you know, if you're just importing from China, you've no real USP. And because we manufacture, we can do a lot of cool customization. Like, Ollie and the guys were over visiting the factory last week, and they were seeing their equipment being manufactured with their name on it and stuff. So that's something a bit cool. So yeah, that's kind of a little bit about kind of what we do.
Yeah, and I love that honesty about it's a performance culture, because too many companies, especially tech companies, they go on like, oh, we're this family and this and that and the other, but they're the most ruthless companies in the world. Yeah. They drop hundreds and thousands of people at the flick of a switch. The light goes off on a Monday and 500 people are out of work.
Yeah.
I prefer when people are direct and to the point, going, this is a performance culture, and you know where you're going to perform. Because I've seen so many people get laid off and they're like, I just can't believe it.
Yeah.
I just can't believe it. Like, they'd let me go like that. And you're like, well, it's a business. They just pretend they're not. They pretend they're the big cuddly monster whereby everyone's friends and everyone plays ping pong together at lunchtime. Whereas I think it's refreshing when you hear businesses speak openly about performance culture and having that balance as well. Going, look, we are here to do a job. Yeah, we'll have a bit of crack along the way, but the job is paramount. How have you scaled that? Because that's what I was so excited to talk to you about today. You don't get to talk to too many entrepreneurs who build things anymore. A lot of stuff is digital. Whereas I'm really excited to hear the physical. Like, how do you make this physical happen? You've gone from buying a welding machine off a college to having this massive, I assume, manufacturing company. Like, how have you built that out? Because A, it must be really costly, and B, it must be bloody hard.
Yeah, look, it is hard. I think I was just very naive, and I brought consultants in when we were starting to make or buy this machinery, and they said, you do not justify doing this? And I was like, okay, well, thanks for the advice. I'm going to totally ignore it. And look, it was a risk, but my gut feeling, I do put a lot of weight on my gut feeling in terms of what we should do. And that's a risk, and sometimes it can bite you in the ass. But look, success leaves clues in terms of, I've seen what some companies were doing in America. You know, Rogue is the poster boy, if you like. They've had phenomenal jobs, so they have. And I just felt that there was no one trying to do that in the UK. Everyone just wanted to either import product from China, or you kind of had small one-man bands manufacturing kind of as a hobby. And we kind of blended two different approaches. And I think previously everyone's approach in gym equipment was like, sell as much as you can. And we kind of flipped that model at the start and was like, try not to actually sell too much. We're here long term. We want you to succeed. And that builds so much trust. How it actually happened, I mentioned about the buying the welding machine from the college. Everything was done through debt, just constant, just reinvestment, and just taking every penny profit and just reinvesting it. I personally didn't take a huge amount out of the business over the first, or well, even to this date, if you like. And, you know, some people would say that's the wrong call, but I've always sort of just divorced my own personal sort of needs and opinion, and it's always just been whatever the right thing is for the business. And, you know, the first 10 years I was MD or CEO of the business, and then I actually brought in a new guy to replace me from outside of the industry. And again, I was sole shareholder. It was completely my choice. And there's quite a lot of people in business probably aren't willing to do that because maybe their ego won't do it. And I just had the fair bit of self-reflection and kind of have to ask, is there someone potentially better to run this business? Because I was off traveling, trying to win new business, but also managing a team of 70, 80 people. And it just felt like I was chasing two rabbits, and I was doing an okay job at it. You know, the business was growing, but I didn't think it was like the most optimal solution. So I was like, I'll bring someone in to run the day to day, and then that'll free me up to do more of the commercial side of the business, product development. So that happened about 2 years ago. So I moved to the purposely ambiguous title of founder.
Love it.
Yeah, which kind of basically just means doing stuff I'm good at instead of pretending to know things about finance and manufacturing and stuff. But look, it was after it, you know, because then after it, I spent maybe a month or two kind of out of the business. I went on a delayed honeymoon with my wife, and I remember I was just like, this is a bit weird, you know. I'm still involved in the business, but I had no executive responsibility. So after about 6 months, I actually came back into the business. So I run the sales sort of commercial function in the business because it
what just, did you think you were going to do when he came in? Oh, I want to unpick this because this is really, really interesting. You mentioned ego and things like that. How did you come to the realization you wanted to bring someone in? So this is a really interesting thing, like, because so many people talk about this, like, you know, not all CEOs are founders, not all founders are CEOs. And it's a really big lesson I've kind of picked up along this journey is that founders are unbelievable at like the first 5 steps.
Yeah, zero to one.
But yeah, maybe from 1 to 10, they're not. But rarely do you see someone have the kind of self-awareness to go, I'm going to bring in someone else here and I'm going to do this.
Yeah. Great question. Look, it hasn't panned out exactly how both Ben's the guy that took over. You know, the original plan was I would be like chairman. I know that sounds a bit odd given I'm 36 being a chairman, but I think, look, part of the reason I did it, there was a piece about chasing the two rabbits. There was also a piece, I don't like using the word burnout, but I also had worked for 10 years, ridiculous hours, and I trained a little bit, you know, three times per week when I had a bit of time, would drink wine at the weekends, but I wasn't actually that healthy. So I feel it was more, I was just pretty tired and thought it might be good to bring someone in here. Now I've completely changed in terms of I train first thing in the morning and every morning, and I've got way more energy and a lot more, which probably isn't fun for people in the team because I think I had a lot of energy before that, but now I'm like, yeah, almost a new person. But I don't, when I brought Ben, I didn't know, I kind of just thought I was going to be in this advisory, just working on stuff, but like we're too small a business to kind of have me outside of it. There's so much we need to do, you know, I've said earlier, I think we're a good company. I don't think we're like a truly world-class company. I think in the gym equipment space, I think we're close to being there already, but I'm talking about just other world-class companies. And I think it's an important mantra, you know, we do not rest on our laurels. We are obsessed about this, how we can get better. And we just find having me in the business does help, you know, got a bit of energy, probably come up with loads of bad ideas and one or two of them might be a good one. So yes, look, I'm still glad I did it because I have more enjoyment doing the stuff that I'm really good at, whereas previously I wasn't enjoying meeting with our finance director every week, trying to pretend I knew all this stuff and even manufacturing and stuff. So I was just like, look, I've done all that. Let me just focus on what I'm strong at. And I think that is important because I read so many finance books and all this marketing and lean stuff. And it, and we tried to do all this lean manufacturing, but that's just not me. And there's no point in trying to pretend it or fake it because people sense that, you know, as well. So look, I'm not saying I'm not willing to learn other areas. I have a huge thirst for knowledge and I like to have awareness, but equally I think it's important to kind of know where you're strong, and I just want to double down on kind of stuff I'm good at and have impact as opposed to having all these like sort of weaknesses that I'm not good at.
Was it weird though? You come in and what the hell is he sitting in my chair for?
No, there's none of that. Look, I don't have an ego, and I made it clear when I brought Ben in and I said to the team, this guy is in charge and don't be coming to me, because the worst thing you could do is bring someone in and then me still kind of
you undermine them straight away, yeah,
making decisions and stuff like that. So there's none of that. Look, there is some stuff he does that maybe it wouldn't be my approach and vice versa, but you know, when you do, when you bring someone in, you have to give them the autonomy and freedom. But it was a bit of a weird transition period. I remember I was like in the gym just during the day and stuff, and I was kind of like, what am I meant to do here, you know? So look, Ben's probably released a few more things to me as well, because he knows that's what I'm good at, and he admits maybe he isn't. So I think it's just good communication and having regular contact.
How did you find Ben?
He was recommended. He was CEO or MD of a company, Chain Reaction Cycles. Oh, they were like a 150 million business. They, unfortunately, I think it went out of business. They merged with Wiggle. So they were like 200 million plus businesses. And they merged. He had kind of ran that for a part. During the merger, so he was highly recommended to me. He ran another business, a guy I know, so I brought him on as a non-exec for 18 months, so we did this dating phase to make sure that we could work together.
That's what I was curious about, because this is a really interesting topic to kind of dig into, because there'll probably be founders listening going, that's a great idea, but I actually don't know how I'd find that person. So you did kind of 18 months kind of getting to know me, getting to know you.
Look, I'm very direct, and likewise he would be. There's just we do have the occasional heated debates and stuff, but it's like, I think it's Bezos talks about disagree and commit, you know, whatever the right thing is. So, but yeah, we did do a 18 month sort of, he was our non-exec, and he added a lot. I'd say it was more of an executive role, if I'm being honest, and he added a lot of value. And then we said, look, you want to take over here? And it has helped. I'm a big believer. You need to get new ideas into your business, especially outside of it. So we've brought in quite a lot of new people into the business. We've also had quite a few that maybe left the business and then boomerang back. And I personally love boomerangs because I think it shows that sometimes the grass isn't always greener. And I think some people have left thinking that maybe working somewhere else might be better, and then they come back. We've hired an ops director from aerospace. We've other people coming into the business from outside other industries, and you get new ideas and getting a blend of, I think someone described historians, you know, you've got the old guard, like the guy Michael Murta, our longest serving team member. He's got two black box tattoos. Like, he treats this business. He gets up at 4 a.m, starts at 5 a.m. We didn't ask him to do that, but he runs our powder coating line. And that's the type of thing. If you treat people well, pay them well, give them autonomy, you know, they will treat the business like it's their own. And there's many other examples like Michael within the business, that we have created that kind of unique culture where we're not a big employer where, you know, employees are a number. And I don't really talk about employees. I talk about team members, and there's a few other weird language things I do within the business. But I think language is important within a business, how you talk to people. And for me, transparency is very important as well. You know, I'm very open book. We'll answer any question to any of the team as well.
What scale is the company at now?
In terms of revenue, last year we had about 20 mil revenue, pounds. This year, maybe 25. I do think some people think Blackbox is like a multi-100 million pound business.
You're like, not yet.
Not yet.
On the way.
The important word probably is yet there. We are expanding internationally, both across Europe, Middle East, Australia, and America. So I feel we've done the hard work in terms of laying the foundations in terms of with our operational infrastructure. And the plan now is to put the foot down and scale the business quite rapidly. We've about 105 team members, roughly.
Wow, that's significant. Is that mainly in manufacturing?
Roughly about 40% of them would be in manufacturing, 25 to 30 would be in warehousing, and then the remaining would be your traditional office base. We also have an installation team, about 8 people. They just travel the world and install gyms in cool exotic places and get to have a few beer after, and I think that's the coolest job.
So that's your new role.
I
feel like I'm really going to have to go on this trip with you guys, just in case.
Just in case. I think if you see me on an installation, generally that's a bad sign, because I couldn't even put a light bulb in. I'm not skilled like that, which probably shouldn't publicize too much. It probably doesn't give people comfort, but...
you know what you're good at? I'm enjoying this honesty because, like, again, it's interesting to see someone who can build a business, but you know what you're good at. You know, when you brought people in who you need in specific areas. I think there's a big lesson to be learned there for founders, because some founders do try to be all things to all people.
Yeah.
And it's that tendency of like, oh, I'll just do it myself. Like, how many times have you heard that? Like, oh, I just tried to do it myself, hired someone, didn't work out, because didn't give them the autonomy or wasn't able to like hand over the reins. So how have you gone from making a couple of units yourself to work with the likes of Barcelona? Like, what's been that trajectory? Like, I guess my real question is, how have you managed to get in to these massive global corporations and like elite performers as a relatively small business?
Yeah. I think you're saying your network is your net worth. Probably 13 years ago, my granny did give me, I think, a check for £1,000. And there was a course in Dublin, actually, at DCU called Athletes Performance. And I signed up for that course. And I remember, like, spending £1,000 back then was like buying a house, so it was. But at that course, you had strength and conditioning coaches for a lot of the Premier League teams. So that was a way how I built my network, was attending so many courses. And you're there. I'm there genuinely interested, wanting to learn about this, as opposed to sticking up a stand at the back with no interest in it. So a lot of it was just being genuinely interested in this industry. And we did quite a lot of, we put quite a few conferences on ourselves, bringing in experts, strength conditioning coaches, and teaching people education-based marketing. I think that was how the initial sort of business was built. And then genuinely a lot of referrals and repeat business. We do have quite a small sales team. Probably got 10 people. But there's three channels of business within Black Box. We've got e-commerce, which is roughly 20-25% of our business. Then we have our key accounts, which is predominantly Pure Gym, who are the second biggest gym chain in Europe. They've got 600 gyms, and we're their sole supplier globally. We've got a couple other key accounts, but they're the dominant client. And then we have offline business, which is just your typical, whether it's a Premier League team or a home gym, that's kind of the, okay, the umbrella that we use. So in the sales team, there's about 10 people. So I think how else we've kind of done it.
How do you get Pure Gym? Like, how do you like suddenly like, oh, 600 gyms, nah, no bother.
Look, they are, that contract is like, yeah, for us to win that. So how it started, and it's quite funny because we have tried to maybe get in with a couple of other chains, maybe a David Lloyd or some of the higher end chains. We're not having as much joy, but Pure Gym basically in 2017, they realized that functional training was getting hugely popular. Before that, they had one supplier, a big Taiwanese PLC, and they just supplied their cardio equipment and their machines. And it was maybe a bit more of a supply only relationship. They got introduced to us because we are kind of experts in this functional training. And we went and visited so many other gyms. At this stage, they only had about 150 gyms in the UK only. And we visited them, interviewed their personal trainers, their members, and we created a concept, like a mini kind of High Rock zone, if you like. And it basically was that before High Rocks. And then we did one gym for them. And next we did three, then we did 10. And within, before we knew it, we had did almost 150 of wow. them. And this was kind of before we even did a contract. So we had that first contract from 2018 until 2021, 22. And then they did a retender process. And at this stage, they had around 600 gyms because they acquired some in Denmark and Switzerland. And they gave us the whole contract globally, which showed you the job we did for them in terms of, we get a scorecard every month. We get assessed. Like last year, we did 100 refurbs in Denmark for them, and you get a scorecard and stuff, and genuinely most of the time it's high 90s. There's the odd time might be like a 95 because you've got a stock issue. Been a great contract for us. They are a great company to work with, and we kind of joke, you know, people think that high performance is the Premier League football teams and stuff like that. Being honest, like, they have got strength conditioning coaches, people that are like loading weights, and there's only a small group of people using the gym. A Pure Gym, they've got 10,000 members, like a Fly Fit for Dublin people. 10,000 members in there 24/7, wrecking the equipment, and it's helped improve us, or it's helped us improve our product quality. We've got very strict service level agreements with them. You know, you can't have any piece of equipment in any other gyms out of action for 24 hours. So it's helped us raise our game massively from a service point of view. And it is a great contract to have, but I would be lying if I didn't say it brought some challenges, because
you're reading my mind here. That was, yeah, as I'm like, thinking, I'm doing the maths here going 100, 600, and the lads are in Belfast chipping away. I was like, how did you manage that contract? Obviously, you kind of give a great insight there. It's like, it's one by one by one. You build slowly. It's like your marketing answer there. I really enjoyed it. It's like you immerse yourself in the people and you do it one by one, because there's a kind of tendency to go, oh, what cool online campaigns can we do? Everyone's answer is now like online social media campaigns, mm-hmm. whereas you did it one by one by one. But was it challenging when you got that going, oh, great, oh, shit?
100%. We have been able to deliver behind the scenes. It does sometimes have an impact on our lead time as well, because we manufacture, like PureDim get VIP treatment within Blackbox, and rightly so, given that they are a big client. But there is times when, you know, when they go, when they expand aggressively, it'll push our typical lead time should be about 3 weeks, sometimes, well, ideally two. There's times it can push up to like 6 or 7, because they're expanding so aggressively. And we've also had other people calling us sellouts because we're like, you know, we are seen as a premium brand doing March On and Corinthia Hotel and Represents HQ and stuff. And then they're like, oh, you're working with a low cost chain and stuff. Personally, and says I would be biased, of course, but like I do see PureGym and other low cost gyms as a really good thing in the industry, because the barrier is so low to get people into fitness. Like 85% of people do not go to the gym in UK, Ireland, kind of Europe. So anything we can do to get people into that is hugely beneficial. But obviously, I am biased because we.
No, it's true. It's weird you say that. I only heard that stat this morning. I can't remember what I was listening to, about like how low gym using is. Because like I'm kind of obviously in it, so you kind of assume everyone's in it. But then, yeah, anything that increases like availability and accessibility for people. What's it like working with someone like Ollie Marchand?
Yeah, really cool. And look, I looked at Ollie and even George Heaton from Represent, and I used to tell myself this story: I'm too busy running the business to exercise and be healthy. But then I seen him, George Heaton, Nick Bear, who we were chatting about offline, and I was like, stop telling yourself that story, you know. And I've changed my, you know, I still work a huge amount of hours, but equally the oxygen mask goes on me first. I exercise first thing in the morning. But look, working with Ollie is really cool, but there's loads of other cool people that you get to meet in the industry. The guys give us a lot of good ideas in terms of what they want to trial out, and we have this collaboration approach. We were laughing when they were at our HQ last week. Like, I remember when Ollie opened this first gym, it was about the size of this room, and we were in regular contact. I advise him not to call his gym March On, because I felt everyone would come in and want to work with him. He ignored my advice, and probably rightly so. But it's great to see the growth they've had, and he is truly influential. And it's not just like Instagram kind of, he's got a shirt off and he's got a good body and stuff. Like, a lot of gyms follow him and stuff. Mm. And these guys live and breathe it. So from like a brand congruence point of view, we're very similar. You know, we're obsessed about this. They're obsessed about it. But equally, Ollie's not everyone's cup of tea. You know, like, I think like going to the gym for a lot of people is a daunting experience. Mm. And we accept that. And with PureGym, like PureGym, over 35% of their members, it's their first time setting foot in a gym. Like, Gary, I'm sure you remember, like, and when you fall off the wagon occasionally, the thought of going to the gym is a scary thing.
That's true. That's a big one. Yeah.
So I think as a biz, we do want to be true to like we love HYROX style training, and HYROX is an amazing concept, but we also do need to think about these other people that are scared to train. So it's something we're trying to get a balance on, and anything we can do to get more people into training, because it is truly transformational and life-changing. I'm sure you could attest to that yourself.
Oh, 100%. It's the most important part of my day. I did a 400th episode last week where I was talking about, like, people could ask me questions, and they were like, oh, what do you do for your brain? And I was like, I work out. because that helps my brain more than anything. Like that's fundamental. So training in a gym in Dublin called Back to Basics, like they're just world class. Like joining them last year has just been transformational. I always went to the gym. I always loved working out, and I did various different things. I did MMA, I did football, I did all different things. I've trained throughout my whole life. But when you go to a place that's world class and you get that treatment and you get the coaching and use the equipment, it genuinely is life changing. How you get that kind of like mentality. And now it's like, I love it, but it is daunting. I remember going back there like, God, I'm not even fit. And you're not, it's the hardest thing in the world because there is that steep climb to getting fit.
Yeah.
And it can be super challenging.
It is. And I'm conscious talking about it because I think if you're not in that mindset, you're just like, I could never do that, you know, but I would just encourage anyone listening to it, like just get started, even if it's Zumba or something that's anything. Not cool, you know, body pump, whatever. But all I found, and you have too, Gary, you know, if you can create this habit, it'll be the best investment you will ever make. And like, I often think like one of the best investments, I only got into running properly probably about 2 years ago. Not even, it was actually well after COVID. And I actually think probably one of the best investments I've made is a Garmin watch and a pair of Saucony trainers, you know, like 100-something quid. And it clears my head. I used to meditate, and I do still occasionally. I used to do a fair bit of yoga, but I actually find running is such a good sort of habit to like process ideas. And I'm like an ideas factory when I'm running. I'll have my phone and just using Siri to create reminders, and I actually create too many and then I can't actually get round to half of it. But it is just I'm just a happier person after I run. Like I'll say hello to people when I'm running and stuff, and I wouldn't do that when I'm generally walking through the street, you know. So, but I used to be a person that would have been like, oh, running's bad for your knees and all that. Look, there's a small percentage of people that is the case, but there's also a huge percentage of people that it's not. And running's having a big moment. Like your gym are actually putting more treadmills back into the gyms because people are finding that it's so beneficial for them.
It's amazing. Like, and yeah, like it's the best medicine. It just, it's such a cliche, but it really is. Like, and you made a great point there. Like, whatever it is, just do something. It's the biggest. And I think you made some interesting points there about like, you know, March On and Pure and different, but you're making it more accessible. It's kind of like you're selling the tools. What people do with them is kind of up to them. It's you're making it more accessible to more people. And I think you're giving them, this is how I think of it, is like you're giving them pro athlete level equipment. And like, that is only a good thing. Like we're all aspirational. Everyone wants to look like Ollie Marchand with his top off. Everyone wants to look like the better version of themselves. You want to train like your favorite footballer. You want to run like Nick Baer. Now we can do that, like, because you can use Black Box. You can get it at home, or you can go to a gym and you can use Black Box. You can go, well, that's the same equipment that Nick Baer uses. Cool. Okay. Now, you know, you can, it's an incredible place. Like the world is a phenomenal place. I remember going to the gym, didn't have any of these people. You didn't know what the hell you were doing. You didn't have like these inspirational role models where you can kind of look at and go, and like they share everything. Like they share their workouts, their diet, their food. There literally has never been a better time to be trying to get fit or like train.
Yeah, no, totally agree to your point about making it accessible, being totally transparent. Because we manufacture, we are a bit more expensive than some of our competitors that just import from China. And when I started, I thought, oh, everyone will want to be happy to pay for this. The reality is it's actually quite a small amount of people that are willing to do it. So we're actually about to launch a new range in a month or two. And it predominantly will come from China because we're very strong at the top end, the premium kind of, the Ollie Marchands, the football teams. But there's no real benefit of doing all that if quite a lot of people can't afford your products. So we're probably a mid to sort of premium brand, and we're just going to introduce a range which will still be really good quality, but it will be a lot more accessible because, if I'm honest, I feel we have got a little bit, or we are a little bit more expensive, and it's something we want to address because we do want to do a lot more. We stepped out of the kind of e-commerce business post-COVID because there was just such an oversupply of equipment. But now we are refocusing on that channel. We're introducing a new thing called Trade Pass, where it's for gym owners, and we'll give them like a special price, because independent gyms is a huge part of our business, and we want to strengthen that relationship with them. And if I'm honest, I think we lost a little bit of our foothold in that market, because just we've grown as a business and we're working in many other sectors, but that is our main business would be independent gyms, so we want to do a lot more in that sector. But yeah, that's all part of the journey, you know, you learn these things. And
but you're constantly evolving, and I love that. Like, I love to see like when a business is constantly evolving, because that comes back to the self-awareness piece. It comes back to not being stuck in your ways of having an ego going, this is how we've always done it, so we're just going to stay here. And that's a sign of real growth. You saw, talked about running having a moment, but functional training, Hyrox, like I've never seen something take off like it.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. And look, the first time I did one, I was like, when I first seen the concept, I was like, this is never going to work. Running around a conference hall, like, yeah, it's going to be a fad, you know. You do one and straight away you're like, sign me up for the next one. It's so sticky. Even my wife, Kiva, she is much more of a yogi, like not into intense training. She did one. There's other people that I never thought would do a Hyrox signing up. So it is it's an amazing concept. I know you've did a race and doing another one.
It's exactly that. Like I did one, I was meant to do two last year. I ended up doing one, and immediately I was like, oh, I see now where I could have done that better. I want to do that better. I want to do this better. Cause it's so, it's unbelievable. The experience. Yeah. They are so clever because they make you feel like an elite athlete.
Yeah.
Athletes only. And you're like, oh, that's me. Like it's unbelievably slick. I've never had an experience from like, this has lived up to the hype and surpassed it.
Yeah.
Like just the way they manage it, the way they organize it, the way they do it, the feeling they get, the media around it. It's rare to see a business just go, yeah, I see the hype.
Yeah. They've hit the sweet spot. I think the two guys were from sort of the endurance market and they seen like Iron Man and that, and they realized there wasn't really that kind of standardized concept in fitness. And look, CrossFit, well, it is dying, unfortunately. It wasn't accessible. Like I tried to do CrossFit and my body couldn't deal with, you know, Olympic lifting.
It was a bit bananas in fairness. Like when you look at it, I could see the appeal, but I never got into it because I'm like, this is just too bananas. Like
it's a little bit culty too, you know. But look, I think CrossFit has had a huge impact and positive impact in the fitness industry. I'm hopeful Hyrox will be. I personally thought that they may need to change the event a little bit, perhaps, but I've heard their CEO saying he's not changing the concept, because a half marathon or a marathon or an Ironman doesn't change. It's the same concept, and they've been here for a long time, which I actually respect. But the fitness industry is a little bit body, if I'm being honest, you know, there is these micro trends. And as a business, as Black Box, like we have got our core values and what we believe in terms of strength training, Hyrox style functional training. And we don't really change too much. Like we'll dabble in a little bit of some of the micro trends, but everything is sort of principle based. And look, if we wanted to make more money, you know, we could have sold loads of cardio and treadmills and done some gimmicky stuff, but that's not what we believe in. And I think as a business, you have to make some choices. And for us, that's the most important thing. Like, if we don't believe in it, there's no gimmicks. We're not going to sell it, even if it's got an amazing margin.
So is Hyrox a fad or is it here to stay?
That's $1 million. I wouldn't say it's a fad, but I just think that the reason I think it's so popular is because everyone's getting PBs and stuff, but I think that will start to slow down, you know, in 2-3 years. And I will think that there is going to need to be a little bit of innovation. So I don't believe it's a fad. Will it still be here in 10 years? Look, I don't know. I don't want to sound like a politician because I don't like, really like politicians, but equally some of my predictions maybe haven't aged very well. So I don't want to say it's not going to be here in 10 years because might be in the Olympics in 2030 for all I know.
That was his prediction. I listened to a podcast with him last week. That was his prediction. He reckons fitness racing. He said, yeah. Look, Carrox is a brand, so it won't be in the Olympics. So his thing was, he literally made a bold prediction, is that fitness racing will be in the Olympics in 10 years.
What's your view? Do you think it'll
I don't know, happen? But I like the ambition. I was like, do you know what? I admire someone calling their shot going, yeah.
Yeah, well, when you see some of the break dancing and stuff in the Olympics in the summer, yeah. You know, it probably should be. But look, it is really exciting, the amount of young people, you know, not drinking as much now. You go into any gym, so many young people are into training. So I'm confident that 15% of people that go to the gym, that number hopefully in 5 years' time could be closer to double that. But there's a lot of work to be done to make that happen.
You referenced it there about younger people not drinking. What else are you seeing? Because obviously you get direct feedback from all your clients and kind of from your customer base and from the gyms you work in. What other trends, movements are you seeing within the fitness space?
Strength's huge, glute training. Look, I still think it is quite incestuous, the industry, in terms of everyone's copying everyone. Cable-based training's hugely important right now. But I think we need to recognize everyone is chasing after that 15% of people that are going to the gym. You know, you have your really high-end gyms and people are spending a lot of money on recovery. Recovery's huge, ice baths and stuff like that. But look, I said it probably 10 years ago and I often think about doing it. I think there's a huge opportunity with the older population from a strength training point of view. You know, they probably have the most disposable income. Their health's probably more important than ever. And I think there's a huge opportunity to do something impactful in that industry. But it's pretty boring working with old people, no offense, and it doesn't excite me. So, I think it is just going to be a lot more of strength, running and that kind of events and stuff as well. I do think COVID and many other people have said it as well. Like, I do think we all are getting softer. We're spending so much time in technology, stuck behind a computer, myself included, and people are looking for these tough challenges to kind of, yeah, upset that.
I literally started listening to The Comfort Crisis this morning, the book. Scrolling on, I was on my Kindle last night, I was looking for a new book. I like to read like fiction at night to go off to bed, but I just suddenly stumbled across The Comfort Crisis. And it's about exactly that. We live in such a soft world. Everything is artificially lit, artificially heated. You know, all our food is available. We have no discomfort in our lives.
Yeah, totally agree. And we all want stuff. You know yourself, you go on a flight and the Wi-Fi is not working. And I do think we do need some perspective sometimes. Like, we all are, everyone just wants things instantly. And look, that's been a bit of a challenge in Black Box too. We do have quite a lot of young people, and a lot of the young people, they want promotions. They are demanding. You know, previously it used to be like employers, companies would have selected the people that work for them. Now it's employees are selecting the company that you need to work for. You've got Glassdoor, you've got all these other platforms, you know, so it is a lot more challenging. And then you're competing against, like, I wanted to hire a guy actually in Dublin quite recently, but he got a job at Salesforce, and I was just kind of like, how are we meant to compete with those? So It's tough for small business, and I think especially like the UK economy in particular is not very strong at the minute, which is part of the reason why we want to further expand in other areas, America being one of them. And I actually had a guy over from America visiting our headquarters a couple of weeks ago, and he said something, he's good friends with Ollie Marchand, he said something that really struck home with me. He says, you're not a global brand unless you've cracked America or you have a presence in America. And look, my main motivation in business is generally just proving people wrong. Like
the American thing, Americans think everything revolves around America anyway. Don't mind them.
But I actually thought it was a good point.
It is so a good point. Like he is, like we all look there, even still. It might be an absolute dumpster fire at the minute, but we do all look to America for what's big. It does set the trend a lot of the times.
Yeah. But on the fitness industry, previously you would have looked to America. It's actually flipped, in my opinion, that UK, Europe, even Australia leads the way with some of these trends. HYROX came from Germany.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't think they have evolved in the fitness. Like I was in some chains in America a couple of months ago and they're like 90 to 80. So there's so much better options in the UK.
75% of the US population is overweight or obese.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly the hotbed of fitness.
It is. That figure probably will come down with Ozempic and everything that's going on. And I think there was an article in the FT a couple of months ago saying how Ozempic might actually be good for the strength sort of training industry, if you like, because you do need to strength train if you're on it.
Ozempic. It is sad, though, that that's what they need. That's what the world needs to actually control.
It is. I have conflicting views on it. It is sad and ridiculous that 75% of people are obese, but I feel they are going to need something, a catalyst to change that. And if it is Ozempic to do it, I don't know. Look, I think we have to accept that that amount of people are not going to change their habits without something. But yeah, look, and that's not an endorsement. I'm not a fan of the concept.
I've flip-flopped as well. I've kind of gone, that is the worst thing I've ever heard. And I'm like, oh, maybe it's actually not. And now I'm kind of somewhere in between. I'm still kind of torn about it. But yeah, like it is shocking that 15% of the people go to the gym. Like that is bananas.
Yeah, it is. But I think it's Mark Andreessen. He talks about strong views loosely held. And that's kind of a bit of a mantra of mine. And I have changed my viewpoint on many things. And I think in business, it's important to have that. You know, you can't just not change your mind on certain things. And I change my mind quite, I don't flip-flop maybe per se, but I'll change my viewpoint on certain things and just say, look, I've changed my mind. Whereas a lot of people maybe aren't comfortable to say that. They'll just be like, nope, this is my belief. I'm not changing. And I think that's a dangerous thing to do in business.
Goes back to your self-awareness thing and the lack of ego. If you have a lack of ego, you're willing to go, yeah, no, I've completely changed my mind on that. That's not what I hold true anymore. And that's what the really successful people do, because nothing stays the same. The only constant is change, as they say. So what's the next step for kind of Black Box? You've kind of hinted at it there. What does the next kind of couple of years hold for you?
Yeah, international expansion's key. You know, I want to prove that guy wrong about America. And look, Pure Gym have acquired a chain there, 66 gyms, Blink Fitness in New York, and it would be naive and arrogant and foolish to think, oh, we can just show up in America and crack that market. But given that we have that launch pad and it's a catalyst to enter the market, it's too good an opportunity to not go after that market. So American expansion, I'm over there next Monday and we'll be there probably quite a bit over the foreseeable future, but also expanding in Australia as a fitness mad market, and also Europe. And we hope to land a couple of other key accounts aside from Pure Gym. There is other low-cost chains, and it probably is more the low-cost chains that are having the biggest impact because they can scale quicker than maybe the high-end chains, and they will hopefully increase, you know, more people getting into training. Also, e-commerce, I said, we want to increase that. So we're doing a lot more online. We're chatting to a few HYROX athletes at the minute, bringing on some more ambassadors. And then we have so much to do on a product point of view, developing new products. Machines do have a place and they probably have came back in. You know, machines kind of went out, CrossFit, functional was everything. And being honest, we were so busy fulfilling that we slightly took our eye off, that we were too busy fulfilling that we weren't able to develop enough new products. So introducing a new line of strength machines, leg press, leg extension, because a lot of companies and schools, universities, they come to Black Box and they want us to go wall to wall and do everything. And we can't do that currently. So we've got a new range coming out of that.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, we have a very long product roadmap across commercial sector, independent gyms, and then also consumer. We touched on, you know, we are probably a little bit too expensive for a lot of people, and we want to address that. You know, we're not going to become a sort of Lidl sort of, you know, supermarket, really cheap stuff. That's not where we're going, but it'll be good quality equipment that's fairly priced. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Bezos talks about, you know, what things are never going to change in business, and like people still want good, fair pricing. And as it becomes more accessible, it's important for us to address that.
Yeah, I believe you're rising tide here. Like I just believe that the fitness market is just, we're only just getting going. It feels like we really are at a tipping point, in a good tipping point, that, you know, fitness is just becoming a cornerstone of people's lives. You talked about it there, about younger generations not drinking, you know, doing more HYROX, doing more fitness challenges, seeking that out. So I think it's only the start of a rising tide. Before we get to our quickfire round, who's your dream athlete? He'd love to be a Black Box ambassador. Give me a couple.
I mean, look, we've did home gyms for David Beckham. I put up a video of him using our equipment on LinkedIn, and the amount of females that commented on it was crazy. Nick Bear, I think, is a cool guy. If we were expanding to America, I know he has some relationships. Like, Ollie's a really authentic guy. I think the most important thing, it's not just about a huge profile. I think having brand congruency and similar values is hugely important. Jake Dearden, we really like, and we're chatting at the minute. We'd love maybe for him to be one. We want to get some more female athletes in. And then we have a couple of Premier League teams we haven't worked with that we would really like to. Liverpool probably being one that we haven't been able to crack yet.
Okay, don't get carried away.
I know you're a United fan.
We were going so well. Right? We're nearly the whole way through and you hadn't mentioned them.
Yes, well, apologies. But we have done Man United, but it hasn't translated into enhanced performance in the pitch.
We'll delete that part. Quick fire round. What book would you recommend every founder or aspiring founder read?
Oh, good question. I like Scaling Up or Traction. I think they're quite good operating systems for people to get their head around. But equally, I do love autobiographies. Look, I'm not a huge Elon Musk fan right now, but I do even think reading his autobiography is quite inspirational. Any of those autobiographies.
That book was wild. Yeah. I read it and I was like, I was in awe and really sad.
Yeah.
Those two things. You can't expect exceptional people to be normal, but you're kind of going, oh Jesus, that's just grim. He's very out of vogue at the minute, but I hope he does come back into vogue, because there's a danger that, like, the greatest entrepreneur of our time is remembered for his madness, not for his brilliance.
Yeah.
But I suppose die a hero or live long enough to become the villain, right? What's something you had to learn the hard way?
I probably didn't touch on the podcast. At the very start, I did go in. Well, I had a pretty bad accident playing Gaelic football and fractured my neck and skull and was in hospital for many months. And then,
Jesus. Yeah, you forgot to tell us about that.
Yeah, that's why I can be a bit slow sometimes with my pronunciation and stuff. But After that, I naively then went into business with some friends from the Gaelic club and very quickly realised that was not the right thing, and we had no shareholder agreement and stuff. So I think probably if you're going to get into something, just know how you're going to get out of it. And I think when you're starting in business, I think you think the least risky thing is to maybe do it with someone else, because it might happen, you know, lessen the load. But if that's not the right person, it could probably be the riskiest thing you can do. I'm not saying don't get a co-founder, because there's many, you know, VCs and stuff that would insist on having a co-founder, and it can work, but just know how you're going to get out of it.
What have you sacrificed to achieve your success?
I don't like using the word sacrifice, because ultimately it's been choices for me, and I've made the choice because I really am obsessed by what we do, and I've made the choice, you know. So I don't want to come across as if like, oh, every day is amazing for me. There, you know, with any job, there's probably 40% of it is shit you have to deal with. But look, there has been choices in terms of I've missed loads of friends and family stuff. Personally, even from a personal wealth point of view, you know, there's been many times that it's like the business first and me second, but they're all my choices to make. As you get a bit older and a bit more experienced, you probably change your viewpoint in some of that. But I think I talk about Black Box 1.0, which was the first 10 years, and then 2.0, which is the kind of next 10 years. And I think in the first 10 years, I wasn't truly healthy. I touched on it earlier. You know, I worked so much. I would wake up and have like two double espressos, maybe even sometimes three, and I wasn't getting energy, you know. And then I realized, I was like, you need to look after yourself first and get yourself truly healthy. And if I could go back and do that, I probably would get into running and everything sooner. And I know it's hard to do, but just do it.
Mm. Initially the pain is a lot in terms of the time and the fear, but like then the payoff is just the multitude of.
Yeah. But we all tell a story, you know.
Time.
Time. Yeah.
And you're so unproductive. Like you're working 12 hours and you're probably productive for five in 100%. Real terms, because you're just, like you said, you're just slinging espressos down your neck and you're just filling an empty cup. Like there's just holes in the bucket and it's just spilling out the bottom.
Yep.
What would you do today if I give you 10 million euro?
Maybe buy a holiday home, maybe.
Where?
Portugal. I do love Portugal. I do love Europe, you know, and I've traveled most places in the world, but all roads kind of do lead back to, we've got so much good on our doorstep. So yeah, maybe I do like warmer weather, so probably would buy a holiday home and maybe put more into the business to just help us go faster. I genuinely do feel I'm more ambitious and hungrier than I've ever been, because I feel like I'm doing stuff that I'm good at. And previously, when you're trying to do loads of stuff, yeah, you probably just don't have as much of a drive, whereas I do have that now.
You can feel the clarity of vision coming off you as you're chatting to you. You can kind of feel like, okay, this guy knows exactly where he's heading to. Enterprise Ireland helps to support and fund a vibrant startup ecosystem, providing supports, insights, and network connections to the most ambitious Irish startups. From expert advice to raising funding, exploring opportunities in international markets, to strategic planning, Enterprise Ireland is here to support you in those important startup moments. For more information about how Enterprise Ireland can support you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Enterprise Ireland, helping Irish startups go global. I'm going to give you 1 million euro, but you can only invest in one person or one company. Who is it?
One person or one company. Oh, AI is obviously, well, the stocks or that. Trying to think who. I do like Bezos. I know he's not everyone's cup of tea, but I wouldn't like to bet against him. But then equally, I don't like maybe always putting these American people in pedestals, because there's so many good entrepreneurs in Ireland and in UK. It can't be myself, you say?
Can't be yourself.
Can't be myself.
Someone you've met along the journey, whether it's a gym owner or an entrepreneur, or someone you've met that you're like, they're an elite operator.
Who would that be? Might need to come back to you.
Come back on that one.
Trying to think who.
If you were going to start again in the morning, what would you do?
Genuinely, I would do something in this industry. I really do love it. Whether it would be gym equipment or some sort of nutrition sort of supplement, but something in the fitness industry, would definitely be in this space.
What do you believe other people would find weird or strongly disagree with?
That I believe? I think, hard work is a huge bedrock of what I do, and I believe in it massively. I believe balance is a complete myth in terms of if you want to achieve anything in life, you're going to have a huge amount of imbalance I think balance, I think there's so much in the media about, this kind of work-life balance and stuff. Yeah, I don't totally agree. Yes, probably for a lot of people, but if you want to succeed in business or achieve something, you have to be prepared to do what 98% of people aren't willing to do. And look, I don't claim I'm a very smart individual. So I feel I have to work harder. That has to be your USP. So that would probably be it.
Our good friend Sahil Bloom, we talked about before we got on, he explained it to me a month ago and it just stuck with me. It was one of those things that I'm just like, that's exactly the summary. He said the exact same as you. He's like, this balance doesn't exist. You go out of balance as a founder and it's very, very difficult. He goes, it's not really real. He goes, what's real is harmony. It's finding the harmony within your life that you can move through the different things without completely, again, falling off the wagon in terms of things like fitness and your family and things like that. He's like, you just need to find harmony. He goes, balance doesn't exist. Harmony exists.
Yeah, I think he is a really good role model for people to follow. I know there's lots of influencers and stuff on Instagram and social media and stuff, and quite a lot of them probably aren't good role models, but yeah, I'm a huge fan of Sahil.
Big time. What's been your best investment?
Well, I joked earlier about the trainers or the Garmin. I think just investment in my own education. I'm a big believer in continued education. Within Blackbox, we have an open sort of book policy. We've over 600 books on Kindle. I read and listen to a lot of stuff, and we kind of have a book club. Look, I've spent a bit of money on Tony Robbins, and I know he's not everyone's cup of tea. I personally like some of the stuff. I also see some of the maybe stuff where he signs people up to high expensive events and stuff. But I think it has to be just continuous education, whatever that is.
What's been your worst investment?
Worst investment? Maybe it's been a couple of hires maybe that haven't worked. I do think the most expensive piece of advice you can get is the wrong advice. I think probably, I don't know if there's one particular example, but I think it's probably not trusting my gut. And I'll be honest, I'm not sometimes totally confident, and I'll maybe doubt myself. We talked a little bit offline about that. And I think probably not trusting my gut sometimes, and maybe listening. I am a big believer in sort of having other advisors and stuff, but sometimes you can listen to other people and it can cloud your own decision. And I think sometimes it's important to just trust your gut and go with that, as opposed to you can get advice from other people, but I think sometimes people will give you advice from what's worked for them, and it's not always totally translatable.
Yeah, bingo. I mean, and people mean well. That's the thing. It's just that it's exactly what you said there. It's through their lens.
Yeah.
It's through what worked for them, not what, no one knows, right? That's the thing. No one knows how you think. No one knows your business. You do.
Yeah.
So it's trying to get enough information that you gather more information, but deciding on your own signal. What's your final piece of advice for any founder or aspiring founder?
I think get started. Momentum is one of the key forces in life. And I'm just a huge believer in just get going. Like I said, when I started the business, it was the worst name ever. That But it, just get going, because I think people, you get this paralysis by analysis, you know, oh, I want my business cards to be perfect or my website. I think just get started and take full responsibility. Like, if you want to succeed in business, you need to take complete ownership, and you can't blame the economy or, you know, politicians or the market and stuff like that. Look, timing is hugely important in business, but if you don't take 100% responsibility, you're not going to succeed in business. So I think those two things would be key.
Love it. You can have excuses or progress, but not both.
Yeah.
Where can people learn more about you and Black Box?
Look, I'm a pretty boring person. I train in the morning. I actually stopped putting up my like Strava stories on Instagram because I think people are just like, you're a dickhead.
Oh, I love it. I'm one of those people, by the way. I would, me and you would be dickheads together. I love doing that. What's the point if you're not going to brag about it?
I know. If it's not on Strava, it didn't happen. We're in good company. But look, I'm on Instagram. I don't even know what my handle is. I'm quite introverted and I kind of, sometimes I do a bit of social media and sometimes I'm like, I do not like it. Like, Ollie is a machine and what those guys do.
Great follow. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not really what I like to do. I probably should do a bit more, because even just some are manufacturing and behind the scenes, I do think people would like to see. So, Instagram or LinkedIn is probably more. I actually do really like LinkedIn.
And then in terms of Black Box, where can people learn, follow and learn?
Blackboxfitness.com. It's BLK, boxfitness.com. And then, yeah, we're on most of the usual channels. So there's a lot more interesting stuff goes on there than my own personal channels.
Perfect. Greg, that was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Gary. Yes, thank you for having me.